that's one of the things I said. I think we ought to take a new look at the whole structure. Maybe we need fewer legislators and more able ones. You know, the newspapers are always complaining about every time they give themselves a raise. Maybe if they had fewer legislators and pay them enough, they'd attract better, higher quality people. There's some people that are not qualified to write the laws of the state. It's probably true in many state legislatures. But the third group, beside the governor and the legislators, is the public. And the public's apathetic. You know, the legislators do whatever they want to. So I'm sure that when many legislators received my letter, they said, we don't need any badgering from Mr. Levinson right now. We got our hands full. But I think that they should get some badgering. So, I'm interested in our government, and I always often get involved in political campaigns. Probably make a few enemies along the way, but I do what I think is right. And not because I want somebody to do a favor for me later. What else? Maybe I didn't answer your question.
No, you did answer our question, but I'm really just curious. If you could separate, say, you know, your family, I know how proud you are of them, and the company, what do you really remember with the most pleasure of the things you've done?
Well, I guess the most pleasurable thing I ever did was to babysit for you.
Thank you very much.
Besides that, when you say separate, you mean eliminate my family?
No, I would.
The most pleasurable thing in my life are my kids and my grandchildren and my family. I'm just so thrilled with my children and my grandchildren that, you can tell from those pictures in the other room. But I'm just thrilled with what my children have done with their lives, and my grandchildren are a never-ending source of pleasure for me. Margaret Lee heard something about the phenomena of becoming a grandparent. You know, for the first time in your life, for the first time in the history of the world, children walk and they talk and fight. You never had before. And they say smart, clever things. I think Dr. Kessler told a story last night. Somebody told a story about the fact that there was this bridge club. Women always want to talk about their grandchildren, so they didn't play bridge. So the main rule, any time they talk about their grandchildren, only allowed three words. And so they could get on to playing bridge. So the one that made the rule, you know, in the year that passed, she had some grandchildren. So she started to talk, but she started to pull out the picture and they said, three words. So she thought a minute, she said, in my life. But in my life, I never saw kids and grandchildren like mine, but this has been like by far my greatest enjoyment of playing. And partly because it's a two-way street. I visited my daughter one time about 2 months ago. It was after two or three months ago, it was after the baby came. Marshall, my oldest grandson, who was 6 and a half, was in school when I came. And I was tired, so I laid down, and I heard the doorbell ring, and his mother answered the door, and before he walked in, he says, "Where's Papa?" And I'm Papa. And that's just thrilling to me that, you know, all day that's all I was thinking about is that I was going to be there. So it's a two-way street, which makes it more exciting than ever. But that, you know, you asked me a simple question, I give you a wrong answer. But that's it. I enjoy my friends, I enjoy life. I enjoy everything except the aggravating parts of it. You see, also asked about my failure. You know, and I've had failures. There's no point in going into them. I've had business failures. I'm in one now, one of the subsidiary companies I'm in. Having some major problems. And the best thing I can do is walk right down through the middle of them and recognize them, do something about it. I've got other business failures, things that I've been involved with, when I went south, the community failures, I don't think it's a failure, but the public might consider the housing authority a failure. I think, if I've learned anything, I've learned that no matter how painful it is, that the best way to deal with something that's gone sour, you might call a failure, is to walk right down to them and face it and deal with it. And you can become stronger for the next time. And the other thing is to learn by your mistakes. And every time I have a failure, every time a business goes bad, or a job goes bad, or an employee we hired goes bad, I sit down with a few people, and sometimes just by myself. I say, what did we do wrong? How can we do it better next time? And if you've done that, somebody once said every success goes out of a failure. And I really do believe that if your failures are not too big, if you can overcome them, you have a chance of being a little stronger for next time. I don't know that I need any more failures. I need to be very much stronger. Or need any more aggravation. But I don't know if that answers it, but that's my answer.
We're at the end of the outline. Is there anything else that you would like to cover or add that we haven't?
Did I tell you about, I probably did tell you about when I went away to Washington, didn't I?
As a youngster.
I did tell you about that.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm going to just tell you one little story. And I don't remember the name of the guy. But it's the kind of thing, again, that I'm proud of. It may sound like I'm bragging, like I'm saying I'm proud of, but many people in business, and almost all corporate leaders, they really have to ration their time and do it carefully. And as a result, they sometimes don't look into things as carefully as they might. And I'll tell you this one little story and I'll close on it. But as you know, we operated the Hayes Army Ammunition Plant. And of course, when we started operating that plant, there didn't seem to be the public outcry against the war in Vietnam. We were making defense, having a defense plant. This was a plant we operated for the government. And at any rate, when the war in Vietnam became unpopular, there began to be a UN cry about our defense plan. Not from the public, but from our stockholders, the young people who were stockholders said, let's get out of this business. It didn't take long before we were out of it. But at any rate, I remember that we had a lot of people working there. I told you we have a maximum. We have around 1,000. At that time, we had 2,500 people working in this one plant.
Where was the plant located?
In Hayes. It was called the Hayes Army Ammunition Plant. And that was when we had a contract with the United Steelworkers of America and labor. Labor relations became a big deal. And I remember one time that the committee, the union committee, went to the company committee and said, there's something that happened that they wanted to appeal to Aaron Levin. They realized that they didn't want to run this to the ground. They realized that he couldn't sit there and listen to very many things. They wanted to appeal this to Aaron Levin. And what happened? There was a guy, black guy, who walked into the plant. Now remember, this is a government plant, like government complex. And walked into the plant, and the guard said to him, do you have a switchblade? I said, yeah. He says, can I see it? He pulled it out of his pocket, and he opened it up. And he said, leave it with me, and stay here, but call the personnel department. Personnel manager came down, fired him on the spot. He said, this is the rule. Anyone caught with a lethal weapon in this plant is automatically dismissed. So they said to they wanted Aaron Levinson to be involved. They wanted to appeal it, and they realized they didn't have very much legal ground to appeal it because, you know, the rule was clear, and it is a defense. So they asked me about it. Listen. I said, sure. I'd listen. So I listened to the committee, and I said, look, it almost doesn't make any difference about the condition. This is a defense. The work rule is clear. I'll get in trouble with the Army if I, you know, if I make an exception. Besides that, if I make an exception, it'll apply to, you know, it'll affect the future. They said, we will agree to put in writing that won't affect any other case in the future. So, you know, it won't be oppressive. And I appreciate it if you talk to the guy. I said, okay, I'll talk to you. So they all left. Now, it's interesting that every member of this committee was white. This guy was black, and they really wanted to go to bat for him. He was caught with a switchblade. That's not very nice to be walking around a switchblade. So they sent this guy in. He walked in, and I said, looked at the guy, and I said, I don't believe you of all people. And it turned out to be a guy, I don't remember his name now, I think it was something like Pickler Young, with a little beard, a good cheek. And I used to walk into the company cafeteria, and I'd sit down and I'd talk to this guy. I didn't even know his name. But he kind of became a buddy of mine. And I said, where'd you get the switchblade? He said, well, I was in the Army, I was in Italy, and somebody gave it to me, or bought it. And I said, how come you come to work on a switchblade? I don't know, I always carry it around. I asked him a lot of questions about himself. He's a family man. It's a church, you know, it's a good church. I was often as much family people do. And I said, okay, I'll do some research. Because the committee asked me to. Partly because it's you. I can't offer much hope. There's a definite company rule. This is a government plant. And I don't want to set a precedent even if they sign it. So, I got to see the guy supervisor in the plant. And he was a white guy. I said, tell me about this fellow you picked me up. I said, what kind of a worker is he? He said, oh, I wish I had workers like him. I wish everyone was like him. He's terrific. I said, is he a vindictive guy? Oh, no, it's just the office. I said, did you hurt anybody? No. Did you ever see him use a switchblade? Well, no, he never threatened anybody with it, if that's what you mean. I said, what else about him? He said, well, he never missed any work. When he gets through work, he's helping other people. I said, well, I want to talk to some of his coworkers. So a bunch of his coworkers, they brought him over to me. You know, what kind of guy is he? His name is Henry. He said, and they said, terrific guy. Everybody loved him. Did you ever see it, his switchblade? Oh, yeah, we saw his switchblade. Does he ever use it? Sure, he uses it all the time. What's he use it for? Oh, he peels an apple. That's a piece of wire. You ever threaten anybody with it? Henry, you gotta be kidding. And I, so that was the kind of interest I got. I went to the personnel department. I said, what kind of a record is he at? They said, he has a perfect record. He never missed a day. And we checked the last place. He worked for American Standard. He also had a perfect record. So I called him in and I called the committee in. I said, I never dreamed I'd come up with you with this kind of an answer. But the guy is reinstated. I'll take my chance with the Army. I want this no precedent thing in writing. And No penalty except the 3 days that he's already lost. God damn it, don't you ever walk to the point with a switchblade again. And it just kind of said to me, don't be so smug. You think you know all the answers, especially when it comes to people. Because you never know what you're going to find out when you look. And you know, it's easy to go by the rules. But sometimes if you look behind the rules and look beyond them, you really, you know, when you're dealing with people problems. Oh, it would have been a terrible miscarriage of justice if I had fired this guy. We'd have let it stand. Because, you know, rules are made to be changed. And for exceptions to be made. So, that's, you know, and I learned by doing it. I learned that you just don't make snap judgments about people. So that's the only thing I can remember.
I hate to make your story, which I love, an anticlimax, but we really haven't discussed labor relations at all. And I wondered if you had anything you wanted to say about that.
Well, in the years that we've had, a union, we've had three strikes. I don't judge the success or how good people are to their employees. You can't relate it to how many strikes you've had. You know, some companies, can be very good at their employees and have lots of strikes. So you have to be good in that relation as well. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know how to play. And I really do believe that there's two sides of the bargaining table. And pretend like you're all in the same team, it's a mistake. However, once you negotiate a contract, one of the reasons that we've had a minimum of problems is that I instituted this when we had the Hayes plan and we're dealing with the United Steelers. What happened was that after we negotiated a contract, we would have a one-day seminar with all of the foremen and all of the union stewards. And we would talk, we'd go over the contract with a fine-tooth comb. We'd break up into little groups. We talk about the interpretation. We talk about the day-to-day working relationship. And we relate it to the contract. Everybody would understand what the contract said. But then we'd interpret it. We'd say, what did this happen? What did this happen? And as a result, we lived together far better because we knew, we understood each other. Why is it just a bunch of words in a contract that you put in the drawer and forgot about? And so this was so successful that the head of the union, the guy that we dealt with, he invited me to be a speaker at the United Steelworkers had one day devoted to the union and civil rights. He asked me to be one of their speakers on their platform, which was the first time they ever did that. But we followed this program for the rest of our operation. Every time we get a contract, we have a one-day seminar. One of the things I'm proudest of in our labor relations is that the people in the plant trust me. The union committee trusts me. And whenever we have a major problem, when it gets down to the point of mistrust, and that they can happen in any labor relations situation, they call me in, and they know when I say something, they don't have credibility. That I wouldn't make a statement unless it were so. I wouldn't make a promise unless it were carried out. And so I have this reputation in my plan. And I think it's well earned. One of the most unheard of things was when we had a plant in Greenville. And the labor, the contract we had with the union had an arbitration procedure. And the final step, the final arbitrator, in case all else failed, was Aaron Levinson was to make the decision. I'm on management side. Unheard of. And yet, you know, there were times when I got down to that, and you could be sure. I leaned over backwards to be fair, because, you know, when you get that kind of a vote of confidence, unheard of. So maybe that tells you a little about labor relations.
What union is the steel company?
The steel company now is the old AFL Bridge, International Association of Bridge Structural and Ornamental Ironworkers. And the local that we deal with, which is the Chapman book, was 527. A guy named Jimmy Pugler was dealing. He, you know, he came a long way, but yeah, he was tough to get along with. There was a lot of mistrust at the beginning, but he was getting along. And I could tell story after story about labor relations. I can tell stories about Bill Modello came up from the International. He was tough and rough. But I remember one time he was tough. And we went on the conditions myself, but there were a number of plants in the district together, a number of companies. He said, and one day Bill Modello called me and he said, let you and I go out. So I said, I can't speak for all the other employees. He said, yes, you can. He said, you can. He said, I can't speak for all the other people on the committee either, but we can sell them something we agree to. We stayed out till 5 o'clock in the morning. We were drinking and talking. And we finally settled on something. We agreed and shook hands. We both went back and sold it, and the strike ended. But, you know, I can tell story after story about things like that. But, you know, if you lose your sense of humor, no matter when things would get really rough, people were down to shouting time, I'd always come up with something. I'd try to come up with something to bring a little humor into it and get everybody laughing. And, or, you know, something like, let's forget about this. Let's get down the street and see some go-go dancers. And we'd do it! Then we'd come back an hour later. You know, everything would be back. Yeah, so that's all I can think of in labor relations. It's, you know, labor relations, marital relations, domestic relations, human relations. No, they're all the same. You're dealing with people. Human relations. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. It's been delightful. After the tape recorder had been put away, Mr. Levinson mentioned that he had been chosen as the man of the year by Histadrut for this last year. But since it was during the same year as the award from the National Conference of Christians and Jews, even though it was the first time the Histadrut Award was to be given to a businessman, he asked them to please not award it to him for that year, so that he feels that it will be done in the future, but he did not want the two awards coinciding in the same year.